Yeah, boy, it's episode 160, and this is the Fantasy Football Auctioneer Podcast. Fantasy Football Auctioneer Podcast, the official podcast of the fantasyfootballauction.com, the only website dedicated to fantasy football auctions. Of course, we got our analysts here. We got a pretty special show this week. We got a guest coming in right away. First, I'll toss it to Blister. He's been doing some hard labor in the extreme heat. Blister, hopefully you're wearing an undershirt under those overalls in that hot weather.
Well, yeah, I've been out helping my sister on the farm, and it's been blazing hot. And, of course, yesterday there was one rain cloud in the whole sky. It came down and just drenched us. And I was telling some stories today about that. It seems like you work a little bit, and then you have to fix repairs and work a little bit and then repair stuff. So it's a never-ending job. I'm glad I never got into that. Let's just say that.
Yeah, man. I don't know anyone could be a farmer. That just seems wild to me. But anyway, good on you. I'm glad you're helping the parents. That's good, though. And like I said before, we're joined by a guest tonight. Kevin O'Brien, he's here with us. You probably know him a lot from Twitter. He does a lot of work on there, but he started this podcast series as well, which has been, by all accounts, and he'll talk about it in a second here, it appears to be really taking off. So he's the host of the Fantasy Football Engineering Podcast, which just released its 18th episode, I believe, today or yesterday. But he's also part of the DLF Writers kind of conglomerate, we'll call it. There's a whole whack of those guys, and they put out awesome work. And his podcast, you can find them. They're part of the DLF library as well. Kevin, thanks a lot for being here tonight. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. So glad to be here. I love auctions. So excited to talk to you guys, fantasy auction stuff. Maybe hit some redraft and some dynasty auction stuff. Really excited to join you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Perfect. That'd be awesome. So just a little side note as kind of how this came to be. We kind of talked amongst ourselves, and we thought, you know what? I think a lot of people just get sick of hearing our voices kind of beat the drum for auctions. And not that other people don't talk about it. There's a lot more mainstream sites that do dedicate some time to that. But maybe not to the extent that people that are really love auction drafting hope for. So we thought, you know what? What if we could find some of these respected kind of analysts in this fantasy football community that just – that wouldn't mind coming on and talking about auction drafts that they do, because a lot of guys in the industry do them, but maybe they don't record podcasts about them or write articles about them per se, but they just do them because they're fun, and the guys in the industry enjoy fantasy football, so they want to do the leagues that are fun.
So we absolutely, I get asked a lot all the time, man. I can't tell you, people ask me, I think somebody asked me yesterday, just looking for dynasty auction values, and I'm like, you know, I meant to get to that, and they ask me all the time, and none of us make the time to write about it, and it's true. Many of us who write about fantasy football and dynasty, even we play in a lot of auctions, from salary cap auctions to even in dynasty, some of us, even though if we do like a typical draft, we'll do our free agent will be auction drafts and things like that. So we're all playing them, and we get hit up for content, and for whatever reason, it's just hard. It's hard to find. It's hard to find content.
I'll be honest.
Except for fantasy auction.
Well, a couple years ago, I started trying to dabble with dynasty auction values because about 4 years ago, actually probably about the time I started following you on Twitter, I think you're in the fishbowl division 1 year. Anyway, but, you know, I was getting into Dynasty at that time as well, so you were a really good follow for me for that. Tons of great info on Dynasty, which I love. But I thought, you know what, let's try some Dynasty values, and I just found it was insanely time-consuming to try and keep up with the constant changes, because as you guys all know, Dynasty, it's year-round. Not like redraft, where right now everybody's kind of getting into it and trying to get out, you know, their values and things like that, but Dynasty, like, you got to be really on the ball to be wanting to update your dynasty auction values in February and April. I found it way too overwhelming. My wife probably would have killed me if I tried to keep up with it, and I kind of just sputtered out. And
yeah,
it's an old Excel spreadsheet somewhere just sitting there collecting dust from 2014 or something like that. But
no doubt,
yeah, it's crazy. So before we get going, Kevin, I mentioned your podcast, and I listen to it pretty regularly. Backed by one of my favorite ones, podcasts that I've listened to lately, is the one where we've had Sigmund Bloom on. I just loved that conversation of listening to you guys talk about just the fantasy football industry kind of as a whole. I thought that was just really cool, actually. You don't hear that a lot. I listen to your pod, and I think of, I can't help it, hope you don't take this as an insult, I think of the Inside the Actor's Studio, where you get this host bringing on these high-profile guests, and you guys just talk about, like, you're not just talking about rankings and stuff. You're getting into all aspects of the thought process of why someone does this, and just, I love it.
For sure. Really, thanks, man.
Cerebral.
Yeah, it's good. I'm glad it comes out that way. Yeah, it's something that I wanted to do because I listened to a ton of podcasts for years, and we'd have these guys on, and I'd be like, you know, why don't you got this guy, like maybe the king of whatever, Evan Silva, whoever, you got this guy on, and why aren't you asking him how does he win leagues? You know, you're asking him like if he likes play A versus B, but there's also so many questions that you could be asking these guys, and Bloom was no different. And I mean, I'll tell you, Bloom was one that I was pretty nervous to interview, but talking to him before we started recording, it was so down to earth, and it became two guys talking, and then we went hot, you know, and it was so easy to talk to him just about philosophy and the community and how he got started and just football guys in general and what he's been covering. And it flowed, you know, it was easy. It was easy conversating to him about fantasy football, NFL in general.
That's awesome. Yeah, I thought it was great. Anyway, like I said, I love the guests you got on. I mean, anybody who's gone through, you got kind of the who's who on there of the football community. I won't even say fantasy community because you know, your DFS guys. And
yeah, I got Peter Jennings coming on next week, man.
I see. Yeah, that was awesome.
Fantasy Labs. Yeah, can't wait.
The top dogs in their fields. And that's one thing I liked, and kind of it made sense to have you on as a guest because I remember, you know, hearing you say, maybe it was even with Harmon just recently, you had this idea, I think, when you first came out. It was like, why don't we pick the brains of these guys who are experts in these, you know, I don't like to necessarily use the term expert, but you know, the tops of their certain fields.
That's right.
Why not use these resources? Like, it doesn't have to be just about having a guy on to talk about his rankings.
You know, that's right.
A lot of that. Like, sure. It's diversifying. So it made sense, I guess, when we thought about diversifying, maybe to have you. That's kind of what, at least in my mind, it made sense. So I love the work you do. Thanks for coming on again.
Yeah, so, appreciate you guys having me.
Right on. So you guys ready to get into this then?
Yeah,
let's absolutely. Okay.
All right, so let's start off here. First of all, I guess I'll throw this to Kevin because Blister, and you can add in after, but Blister talks about this a lot. But for you, why do you like auction drafting?
You know, I think it spurs the competitive nature of it. You know, you kind of go after your guy and it throws it out there. And once a player gets nominated, it's like, man, I like that guy. And then, hey, that's my guy. I'm going to go for him, right? Rather than somebody picks him and says, man, I should have traded up for that pick. And then you're already moving on to the next pick. But when a guy gets nominated in a auction draft, be it a startup draft, be it, you know, a rookie auction, you know, a regular draft auction type thing, no matter what it is, if you're nominating in an auction setting and you're sitting there with some cash in hand and you're like, hey, that's my guy, you can go after him, you know? So it doesn't matter if he's considered a quote unquote first round pick or an eighth pick or 12th pick, you can just, you know, dedicate a percentage of your budget and go after him, and then you can go duds and studs if you want, and or you can pass on it, and you know, in different strategies within that. So it's just, I think it cultivates and it just creates this competitive environment that's really cool. You know, live auctions, we were talking a little bit before we started the pod tonight, is that I really like live drafts, you know, when you can do that, it's really fun. It's kind of a little bit more harder to maybe set up, but we have a couple of live auction drafts that we do for some of my salary cap leagues that are really fun. You know, you just sit there and you're kind of going back with 12 different people, you know, hey, bids to you, $12. Man, I really didn't want to go. All right, 15. And then you jump it up, and it's just this competitive nature that it spurs the action a bit. So I enjoy them in a ton.
Yeah. Sound familiar, Blister?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, like you think about auctions and we've talked about it a few times, but you're always have to be on. Like you know, I think when we do fantasy football drafting and a lot of the things we do, we're competitive by nature and we want to outsmart, outwit, and we want to beat our opponent and our friends or whoever they are, family, fellow experts, whatever the case may be. You just want to win. It's not even so much about the prize money. It's just about the pride, I think. And so when you're in an auction, you want to, you know, you can be involved in every player, and it's not just, okay, I'm the fourth pick, so then on the way back I have, you know, roughly these are the five or six guys I might have to choose from in a snake. And you know, you're always trying to strategize, but in auction you could be on anybody at any given time, and so it makes it a lot of fun, and it makes you stay alert, and you know, you're just involved. Beckett used the term hyper a few times when he was on the Ross Tucker, and you have to be alert. It's like when the guy goes on a pee break at our live auction and comes back in, and you know, the guy he wanted awesome. All of a sudden is gone, and he's like, what, I can't even believe he was nominated already. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of strategy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so definitely. Speaking of strategies, what strategies, you guys, what do you find yourself in drafts this year, or even in the past, but what strategies do you find yourselves incorporating? Anything specific? Are you seeing some trends that make a strategy for you? Like, go ahead, Kevin, I guess, if you want to.
Yeah, so it's, you know, one thing that I've definitely been doing is shark bait. You know, I love throwing that chum out there. You know, so if there's like a guy that I know, like Alshon Jeffrey is a player that, despite no matter how, when he was doing his best, I was never really a buyer in him for whatever reason. Didn't like his style. Maybe I can't really explain it, but he'd be a guy that I'm not interested in taking, or a player in that tier where there's probably that tier for me might be a little bit wider than the average person. I like to throw that chum out there and get some money off the table right away. So it might be like a mid-range player where people are blowing even 15 to 20% of their budget off the bat. Because I think that invoking that strategy, it helps me in many different ways. And I've heard you mention this part of it is that you set the price in that mid tier and then work outwards based on that price setting that's going to occur. But I can throw it out there and kind of, they can, you know, chum is a perfect word. They did is shark bait, you know, they go out and they go get it. And then the other part of it that I think people don't realize about auctions is that there's a lot of price enforcement that goes along, especially in these blind biddings. If you're doing one through MFL and it's kind of like you put a bid in and then you got a clock to it or something, where the less money that they have, the less willing they'll be to price enforce you on your big time players. So let's say we get rid of a couple of the mid range tiers that we want to get rid of those players. When I go nominate like Antonio Brown, which I might pay up for, I have less people willing to go price enforce me on that higher end player, right? Because a lot of times they'll just be like, they'll know, especially with me, like it's pretty open book with, you know, my target players and people who follow me. It's pretty easy to find my content where they can look up and say, hey, he's going to go for Freeman, he's going to go for Antonio Brown. So these guys like to price gouge me and they like to price enforce me. So I really want to get money out of their pocket so they're less likely to price enforce me that way.
There you go, Blister. You see that even with, like, I mean, not to go back, but, you know, our home league that we do, pretty much every guy in there listens to our pod. So that, and I think half of them, you know, check out our site. They know the players we want. It happens every year where the guys that we want, some dick always decides he's going to make his stand against us, and all of a sudden Keenan Allen's my guy and I've got to pay out the nose for him. And, you know, that's part of it, right? That's, you know.
Oh, it
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
And you hate to, like, I know even you, Slim, are good at, you're good at enforcing, like, making sure somebody doesn't go for two of you. I don't, you know, who's that? How much? Oh, no, that's too cheap. Let's go another, you know, and you kind of, you know, when you're in a league that you're familiar with all the players, you kind of have a good feel for who they like and what they want, like you're saying. And it makes it quite interesting. And it makes, like you say, you're always involved in it. It's a strategy. And one of my strategies is try to get guys out there and get money spent on people I'm not interested in. Because like Kevin was saying, it's a lot harder to price enforce if you don't have the money to do so. So if you can get money spent and gone, then do it. Like when I remember when we first started out, you know, and in the beginning, it was a strategy. You know, you throw out a kicker early, and if somebody spends more than a buck on it, well, then that was maybe a waste of a dollar. But now, like, I was kind of getting angry with that after a couple of years because I wanted people to spend $45 or $55 or $65, not just a couple bucks. You know, once they do that, as soon as they do that on one player, then they start tightening up right away. And, you know, it's all part of the strategy. Now I think we've eliminated kickers, so that eliminates that problem. So, yeah.
Kind of to stick with strategy, I'm going to ask both you guys, in terms of your roster construction, like, do you guys find that you end up often with a very similar roster, just maybe in terms of the price of certain players at various positions, you know, wide receiver two, roughly the same amount? Or do you guys try and really deviate or diversify if you're in more than one draft, just, you know, because that's your strategy? Or do you feel really good in one, you find one budget or something that looks really good and you just try to hammer on that and just eat?
Kevin.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so I do, and specifically, like, when I try to go into an auction, I have buckets or tiers of players for different roles. So, like, my top end wide receivers, there might be like five guys that you put in that top tier. I typically only want Antonio Brown, so I limit myself and who I want in that tier. So yeah, I end up with the top guy in that tier being Antonio Brown quite often, because that's the guy I'm going after, right? I target him and I go after him. When my tier gets a little bit bigger in that mid-range, what you'd call maybe like in a standard draft would be like a third round to fifth round wide receiver, that range, I have quite a few, so I can rotate through a couple different players where I'm not ending up with the same player necessarily. Because, and I've heard you guys talk about this in previous pods, is something with an auction, it can go sideways really quick, so you have to be a little bit more flexible where, you know, I want a bigger tier in my, say, and I don't know what you guys usually refer to, but I think of in terms of percentage. So percentage of your budget, let's say it's 10-15% of your budget players, those wide receivers, I try to have a bigger pool that I can pull from, because I don't want to get outpriced on that mid tier. I really want my value in those ranges. So I diversify a little bit more there. And then the top running backs, I usually try to grab a top running back. I think I would identify maybe like in a seasonal league type thing, I'll have that tier maybe a 6-7. In Dynasty, it's probably 3 or 4, maybe 5. And I want one of those guys, so it's similar to my higher tiers. Won't be as diversified, but the later tiers, I'll make sure that I have some flexibility to go left and right.
That's funny you mentioned the running backs like that, because I think in Dynasty, I kind of think the same way. I want one of those top, like, if I can get my hands on David Johnson, I'm giving you him and a stud wide receiver, and then let me kind of fill in the gaps with some lesser guys. But definitely in redraft, I think you can stretch that, like you said, further down. And I think it'll be interesting this year where that cutoff is for some guys. With six, is it eight? How do you feel about Todd Gurley versus, you know, Jordan Howard? And, you know, some guys like him, some guys don't.
For sure.
Lister, what do you get? What do you got? Do you have a set strategy that you found kind of this year so far that you're liking?
Well, you know, I look back at, like, every year I kind of chart some of my bigger leagues. I chart all my picks, and you look back at some of my teams. I had a lot of Antonio Brown as well, and Willie Snead. But guys that hurt me last year, I you know, picking up like Stevie Johnson, who didn't do obviously much, but Sammy Watkins, Keenan Allen. I had Zach Miller as a tight end on a lot of teams. Dougie Martin, CJ Anderson, a lot of, like, so when I look back at these teams, and I kind of had highlighted them all, Justin Forsett was a guy. So obviously I was spending more on receiver last year than on running back. And so there's a lot of similarities in a lot of these teams. Charles Sims went down, Eddie Lacy, Dougie Martin, I see. So I look through all these teams and yeah, you know what? My core players are quite similar most of the time. Last year that kind of come back to bite me. But in years previous, it helped me win a lot of leagues. So I think I still have the guys that I truly believe in, and I'm willing to spend a little bit more money on. And you can't predict the injuries so much. But I think even this year, like when I start mock drafting, I try a few different strategies, and I'm prepared when we go into our real drafts and big drafts of what I like and what I can do. So there's always guys that are like, you get thrown a curveball, and so I'm ready to go in a different direction. But at the end of the day, after you spend your big bucks, like I calculated before how much big money can be spent on a certain amount of players, and once those are gone between your 12 team league, then it really comes down to those, I guess an equivalency in a snake draft, it's your first couple rounds, you're kind of, you're picking some good players, and then after that is when you start just looking for the value and stuff like that. So in an auction, it's after those, the $50, $60 players are all gone and people are starting then, tug of war over the $20 players and less, and 20, you could even scratch it to 25. That's where I think that's where you start to differentiate more. So, I don't know where it'll go this year exactly, but I'd love to have David Johnson on my team. And the other night in a mock, I paid $70 for him. I was talking to Vinny on our.
Oh, you told me that, yeah.
Vinny said it
actually wasn't that bad.
I liked it. I really liked it. And Vincent, there, Gabriel of our ECL league, he said that in one league he almost went for 90. I said, I'd probably have a hard time going to 90, but
what's the budget when you guys talk? What's the budget?
200.
200.
Yeah.
So even 70 is like 35%.
Yeah.
He went for 67 in the one that I was just doing with some guys from Twitter that follow us and stuff. We set up a
tonight?
Yeah. He went for 67. Levy both, but which is too much for me. I mean, I have a hard time paying that much, but.
Yeah. You see, in the one I was in, like, that's the hard thing about mocking. Like, the few that I've done so far, I've been quite impressed because they had a full lineup of people, and I knew they were still all alive because they were nominating, defenses and kickers of about the seventh round. And, like, they weren't, robots wouldn't do that. But the thing was, as you get later and later, though, guys like, I don't think Willie Snead's going to go for $11 in our auction. I think people might have lost interest, or maybe they tapped out by that time. But that's the interesting part, because down the road, some guys do in a mock, they'll tap out after a couple rounds. They spend their big bucks on their two or three guys, and then they'll check later on and see what kind of team they ended up with. So I don't think that happens in our live ones. When we go live and we're on for 4 or 5 hours, you're not getting away with that stuff. Guys I remember just sitting on, they know I remember that one year it was Larry Fitzgerald. He was just sitting there. It's one of the top tier wide receivers. And it's like, everybody knew he was there, but nobody wanted to let on that he was there. Nobody really wanted to nominate him. Everyone kept hoping money would get spent so that once he came up, they'd be the only one. Remember that, Slim? I just remember it so clearly. And, that always happens, but yeah, it's good to mock.
Yeah. So where do you guys find your cutoff at running back this year? This question I wanted to get from you since we were on the topic. Like, we talked about, Kevin brought it up in Dynasty, you might just gravitate to those top three. But, in the redraft, it's maybe 6, 7, 8, depending where you like, a guy like Isaiah Crowell or Fournette. You start getting into that 9, 10 region. Now it's, for some guys, a little bit sketchy. Just for your own sakes, where do you guys see this kind of, the point, I guess, of I'm going to buy a guy here, and if I don't get this last guy, I guess I'm waiting, and I'll end up, not to say RB0, but you'll have quite a different outlook in your team, a whole bunch of 15 or 20 $100 guys in a 200 budget versus having a guy that's probably going to be $45 or more.
Yeah, I'd say my running back tier is like probably the top eight or so. So I'd include in that like David Johnson, Bell, Zeke, McCoy, Gordon, Freeman, Ajayi, DeMarco. And then Howard is really starting where I get fuzzy.
Yeah.
So like nine would be around Howard, Gurley kind of area. And I think if I'm at that point where I missed out, like I really want to secure one of those top, say, six or seven. I try to get Gordon or Freeman has been my two targets this year, particularly in Dynasty. I've loaded up on both of those. But even just to secure one of them, and then if my price kind of I'm getting squeezed out, I won't chase that second tier of like Howard, Gurley. I'm not reaching for Fournette, Lynch, Miller. You're
pulling way down.
I'm letting it. I'll let it slide and try to get, you know, someone like Spencer Ware, Doug Martin, even Gillislee, something like that, where I can slide down quite a bit, probably get a better value. And then make sure I pair them up with, I mean, I don't like to handcuff, but an auction, it's a little bit easier where I can get a handcuff for a buck or something. You know, get someone like a Martin and a Quiz, right? So, like, I can start Jaquiz Rogers for the first 3 weeks for low money and then slide in with Martin, who's still relatively cheap, as my second running back kind of committee, if you will.
Totally. That's kind of how I approached even just this mock I was doing with these guys tonight. I had every intention of buying David Johnson. I had $60 for a top one. He went for 67. So then I just kind of found myself waiting, and I ended up with, you know, Carlos Hyde and Danny Woodhead and stuff like that, just because everyone was still going for too much. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to wait and let this value kind of percolate a little bit later. And I mean, what did I get Hyde for? I don't even remember, less than $20, which I thought was pretty good, $16. So I was like, you know, I'm just kind of glad I waited. But I kind of found myself doing the same thing, Kevin. I don't know, how about you, Blister?
I feel the exact same way. Like I was talking with Slim before he came on the air, Kevin, and we, our one league, we kind of tweaked the scoring this year, so it's a quarter point per carry and only half point PPR. And you know, looking at those values, it was similar to the Fishbowl a couple years ago, or last, was it last year, Slim, or a couple years ago? And
last year,
and you know, the running back, like the top receiver projected, it would be the 12th in terms of running back scoring. He'd be number 12. So, you know, 260 points for the top ranked receiver versus the number 11 running back is ranked at 264. That's the projections. You know, so I look at those top receivers the same, pretty much the same way. I'm a little nervous. I've never been high on Ajayi, so still not, but Howard, I hope he does well, because in one of my dynasty / keeper type leagues, he's my RB1, so I hope he's really good. But I'm the same way. I love to have one of those top guys, and if not, I don't have a problem with owning a Martin and a DeQuiz or a Spencer Ware and Kareem Hunt, something like that.
Yeah, right on. So any areas, I'm curious about value. To me, this is the one way, I guess in any draft, it doesn't matter if it's auction or snake or whatever you do, you're looking for value at some point. Ideally the whole thing, I guess. Any areas you guys are seeing considerable value, just, you know, consistently, I guess? Is there a certain tier in a certain position or a position in general? Anything, you know, anywhere that you've kind of seen, like, hey, I'm always ending up with these certain players for what I think is a good price or a good value. Any trends like that you guys are seeing?
Yeah, so usually I struggle with this because every year I do a mock and I get locked and loaded on my value plays. And then I go to my home redraft league and then it's completely flipped upside down. I'm like, you know, like the guys that are going high in mocks are actually falling in my home redraft league. And I kind of get flipped on end a little bit. But in terms of values alone, you know, typically you find guys like Martin, like I mentioned, Gillislee still I think is undervalued. Going down the list, I don't mind spending low money, like a few bucks on like a Jonathan Williams, Kareem Hunt, someone like that, where they may excel, or like somebody that, some things like Robert Kelly, like he's probably dirt cheap, but he could be a starter value. Any guys that I can get startable weeks that can be like on my, more towards my end of my bench, RB4, RB3, where they can maybe creep up into the top 24 RB scoring. I like to hit those kind of values, something for nothing kind of thing, you know? I'm sure Rudolph is probably still criminally undervalued. Cameron Brate's probably undervalued. Guys like that, that I try to hit value where I think people are prematurely assuming that they're going to lose their starter role. I try to hit those players hard, you know, so you can get like even Foreman, somebody like that that's cheap where, you know, people think Lamar Miller is going to hold on to that job and he might not. So I want to grab at least one of those guys that I just mentioned where I can reasonably see a path for them to be a start of my lineup for a few weeks, at least through the year.
Right. So you just mentioned a number, and that's what I was going to kind of ask. So when you're constructing your roster in, say, a redraft setting for auction, how many of those guys, like, do you want to, I don't want to call them home run threat or gambles, but, you know, these high upside guys that are cheap, you know, we should all have at least a couple buck or two guys on a list that we feel comfortable taking as a, with some high upside, or like you said, can be weekly starters for a chunk of the year. How many of those guys do you like to have on a roster? Like, I don't think you necessarily want your whole bench to be that, right? But
so usually I'll do it by, in auctions, I usually like to do percentages. I work on percentages of my budget, really, less than the number of players. So I may like set aside 5 or 10% of my budget where I'm spending $10 or $20 dedicated for that kind of group, and then allow myself to like make that decision in the moment. Like, man, like all these value plays that I had for a dollar are like drying up. Let me go for $3. You know, it's like I want that kind of like flexibility to not just say I need to have 3 or 5 players, but rather be able to, you know, goose it a little bit if I want to spend the extra buck or two. And then I'm kind of like thinking about my budget in terms of that and then go from there. Because generally, I'm always hot on the waiver wire. So even after my auction is over, you know, I'll be right there for the week one, ready to pick up some of the guys that I might missed out on. So I think more in terms of percentage, and putting it probably 5 to 10% is, 10% will be the high end, but.
Lester, how about you? How much risk, I guess, is maybe the term, I don't know. How are you trying to build your roster to kind of hopefully have some of that home run hitting ability, I guess, where you're going to find those diamonds in the rough, even if it's just for a few weeks? How many of those guys do you like to find out?
Well, you know, I like to have, I remember in the past, it's nice to have one solid stud if you can at running back and wide receiver, and then go from there. If you have too many guys that have upside, you know, not all those guys might hit upside, you know. And I remember doing that in the past. This guy is a sleeper, this guy has potential, and they don't always pan out. Whereas if you get a guy, you know, for receivers example, Antonio, Julio, AJ, you know, Mike Evans, they're pretty consistent, and it's nice to have that. Like, you don't have to worry. But and you get other guys, like there's a lot of nice value, I think, in receiver with guys like Tyrell Williams and Stephon Diggs and Pierre Garçon, Golden Tate. A lot of these guys are going to go later on, and you know, you're getting them for under $10 a lot of times, and those are guys that could be easily a wide receiver one any given week. But it's not, I don't know, I feel more comfortable, I guess, pairing a few of those guys with an AJ or maybe a Jordy Nelson or somebody like that. So I always got to keep that in mind, because you can't fit all those guys on your roster anyways. Like, even when I'm mock drafting, you know, there's such a big list of guys along that line. Even Larry Fitzgerald is, you know, Martavis Bryant, Devontae Adams, potentially Devontae Parker. All these guys could be great. And some of them are undervalued. Some of them are, you know, Rashard Matthews. You know, there's so many faces there now. People kind of discount him. He could still be very solid. But you can only fit so many into your roster each week. So I'd rather spend up and get a couple guys that are, you know, going to be the number one, and then you're going to have a room for a few of these $10 or $12 guys, and then you go to your dollar guys down the road. And you know, a lot of people like Adam Thielen and guys like that. And I really think that he's still just a dollar or two in your auction draft, and he might be a solid wide receiver three, you know, week in and week out. But yeah, I hope that did that answer your question.
So. No, it did. I was just going to add to it a little bit, just to because I find myself when I look at wide receiver, especially, it's hard to almost to not overthink it. I look at the list and I just think, oh, was, like you said, there's all these cheap guys later on, and I find it hard to say to myself, you know what? I know that they're there, but I still need to spend some money on a top couple players. And I find myself just about every draft saying, all right, I know that this receiver is going for maybe more than I wanted to spend, but should I still be buying him? Because I know that I could get John Brown and, you know, a bunch of the names that you guys have thrown out. I could get those guys, but do I want to just have a roster of all of those types of guys, or do I need to make sure I get a Jordy Nelson or a T.Y. Hilton up there as well? Maybe not spending up for Antonio Brown or, you know, Mike Evans or somebody like that, but somebody who's, you know, fairly consistent, so that I don't have to have all these, you know, $5 receivers, and, you know, maybe build a roster just like that. For me, that's where I kind of overthink it. Sometimes I just sit there looking at the prices that are going up. Like, oh, well, I'll keep waiting. And then now I have to buy those guys because I've waited too long. But
I think in any situation, auction or other, you always want to know what your tiers are, and you want to see as those dry up, right? Because there's like a guy like Golden Tate is probably in that mid range where you're maybe spending 10-15% on that guy, maybe close to 10%. And on that one receiver, but at the same time, he's giving you that safe floor that you can kind of count on if you swing in with like a Parker or Martavis Bryant, where that guy maybe has a high ceiling, or like another one would be Pryor that comes to mind. But like you're trying to hit those high ceilings, but you want to kind of balance that out with one of these guys where it's a Golden Tate or something where you think he has probably a safe floor to be starting on your roster and give you that.
I know you talk about that a lot in a dynasty context, and probably in redraft too, is that mixing and matching, you know, having that high upside but with the safety, and I think that's actually a really good point, is put Golden Tate. Like, I don't know how you guys feel maybe about somebody like Demaryius Thomas, maybe, or he's kind of undervalued sometimes. I sometimes view him as being a little bit safe. I know I'm a little bit sketchy on the quarterback situation this year, but I think of some other names. I don't know. I typically like to think of Keenan Allen like that, even though I know he's injury prone. Everybody calls him injury prone. And when he plays, I feel like he's safe. And he can still put up some monsters once in a while. I don't know. Does Jarvis Landry fit into that for you guys anymore? I don't know. He's kind of as a safe PPR type of receiver anymore. Is he in a void for you guys? I'm just trying to think of some names that.
No, Landry would be a safe floor guy for me. Yeah, you know, like just looking who would be in that range is like Davante Adams, where you have touchdown volatility. So if you paired Adams with Landry, you have a safe floor with the PPR. And then Adams has the high touchdown upside, where he may not get the receptions or the yards that you actually need for a safe floor. So those kind of pairs is where I would look. You know, Tyreek Hill is another volatile player where you could rationalize that there could be some touchdown regression there that's going to occur. So, but maybe pair him with a Crabtree, right? So similar players that probably cost about the same, but Crabtree's floor is probably pretty safer as your wide receiver two or wide receiver three, probably wide receiver three more often in ideal situations. But yeah, certainly you want to be able to pair those kind of all the way down your roster as you go. You know, if you're going for like a, even Corey Coleman, somebody like that, where you might think like could have some high upside if he's the wide receiver one in Cleveland, and then pair him with somebody that has a safer floor. Someone maybe, I don't know, John Brown or Deshaun Jackson, maybe someone like that where they might have a safer floor.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. That's a good point. Like I sometimes don't think of that. Even when I did my mock tonight, I ended up with Davante Adams, Terrell Pryor, and who was the third? I can't even remember now. It was a guy very similar, like, where I just felt, okay, could be top 10, could be, you know, wide receiver 30. That's maybe the risk. And I felt like, yeah, maybe I got too many guys like that. Wasn't necessary.
Yeah, and I think an auction, it's, you can get easily caught with trying to find too much value, you know. Yeah, like at the end of the day, you got all this value, but then it's like, who's actually scoring points for me? Yeah. You know, so you can get a ton of value, and then likewise, not paying attention to all ceiling players, you know, and you kind of don't want the bottom falling out on too many players.
You got to have a backbone, right? Your team's got to have some kind of like an identity or like someone to, you know, I don't know if you're thinking about it in terms of a real sports team, you need a leader kind of thing. And then if you get, like you say, too much just value, sometimes that just comes up a little too thin.
Yeah, and you might just be buying Twitter buzz if it's value too, things like that. I mean, a couple articles put out by some heavy hitters, and all of a sudden this guy's now value or perceived value, and now we're into that whole perception of, are you just buying the smoke screens or you know, what is it? But that's, all good points. So I figure we can kind of wrap it up, and I'll kind of maybe fit into this. I want to let you guys get out of here on who are a couple guys, then, since we're talking about value, that you probably are never going to own. You just know whoever it is based on their value. It doesn't necessarily have to be a guy you don't like. Like, I know you mentioned Alshon Jeffrey before, Kevin, but just based on what you're seeing in terms of where he's being drafted or whatever, who are a couple guys that you just think, I'm never going to own him. I don't want to really at that price or for whatever reason.
So for us, like seasonal leagues, Amari Cooper is one that I've been avoiding just because of the high cost that they expect to be a high-end performer, but you're paying, you know, top 10 wide receiver cost. That one I'm typically avoiding. It's just, you know, I'll let somebody else hit on his ceiling, if you will, but that high of a cost, I don't want to be reaching for ceiling with that high cost. So Cooper is one that, based on cost, I probably will avoid. You know, guys like Hopkins, where, not that the cost is high end, he's probably wide receiver 12 to 15 range, but at the same time, I don't trust the situation at all for him to recover. So that's one I would avoid based on cost. Trying to go down the list here. Now, I mean, generally, like I mentioned, Jeffrey again, that's one I would always avoid. But then I don't want Gurley. Gurley's cost is too high. I think he's a reach that people are reaching for. That tier is kind of falling away, and then people, like, I think in auctions you'll probably find where all that, you know, those top like eight that we talked about are off the board, and then people are like, oh man, I need my RB1, and it's really sitting there, and they go and reach for him, and then there's a couple people gonna upbid him where I don't think he's actually got that value to chase. So Gurley's probably one that catches me at the top of that second tier that I would avoid.
Now, how about you, Blister? I know those are a few names that we talk about. Like, we pretty much smashed the Houston Texans fantasy offense in auction values anyways to pieces in the past. So I know how you feel about Hopkins and guys like that, but a couple names you got?
Well, I'll start with quarterback. You know, I still can't imagine, and I still see it happening all the time, but guys going a quarterback for $35, $30. I can't imagine spending more than, if I'm really loose, more than $12 on a quarterback. I can't even imagine that, really. So, you know, guys like Rodgers, Brady, Breeze, they'll probably never be on any of my rosters, that's for sure. I'll probably avoid Zeke as well. There's just, you know, if you're going to spend the money that he's going to drive, you want him for 16 games. I think, I just think in some of the leagues we play in, even if he's suspended, I don't think it's going to affect how people bid on him. So I really don't want to pay that kind of money for him, knowing who knows what he is in line to get, or if he could do something dumb before the season's over and get more. So I'm not going to be touching him. Tight end, similar with quarterback. I as much as I love some of the big names, Jordan Reed, I just can't imagine spending money on him that he would drive, because I just think he's just so, you know, he's banged up a bit right now, but if he gets another concussion and you can't see that coming, like, he could be done. So I can't imagine paying that kind of money for him. I'd love to have Gronk, and of course I'd never usually get to own him, so I probably won't get him. But guys like that, a receiver, I don't know, there's most of the big names I wouldn't mind owning a share or two of, like Antonio Evans and those guys. I don't care for Cooper, never have either. Allen Robinson's a guy I won't own. Keenan Allen, he burned me too many times last year, and I know you shouldn't be like that, but I am. So he's gone. And you know, Brandon Cooks too. He's got a lot of hype.
I took tonight. That was the guy.
Yeah.
Keenan, Devontae, and
if he could stay healthy, man.
Prime.
I'm a little concerned. Well, this might be a better question for Kevin, because he's there. He's in the heartbeat of New England. But with Brandon Cooks, I'm a little worried about him. You know, he's going – they have so many people there, and he hasn't – I mean, they can do magic with players they bring in, and he was pretty good to start with. But, you know, he wasn't great outdoors. I had a bet with Hilly about – I can't remember how many points I said he'd get, like fantasy points, that is. And then I don't remember what it was. Hopefully he forgot too, because I'm wrong. But those are some of the guys that I'm a little skeptical on, and or can't own because of the price.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of common names you hear across different platforms. I mean, like I said, the Texans, Gurley is a popular name of an avoid, I think, for most people that are on Twitter, I should say. Not that Twitter's the end-all, be-all, but I saw like J.J., tweeted out something today. You kind of forget when you're on Twitter that if you're on there, you're probably in about the 5% of the fantasy football population that is hardcore enough, you know, to go on there. So that, I don't know. You forget that a lot of people out there don't do that. So you kind of take the stuff as, yeah, everyone knows to fade early a little bit, but really there's a lot of people out there that don't know that. And, that's where home leagues can kind of be used to your advantage, sure, for some of us, right? But that's awesome. I think, you know, great stuff for the listeners tonight to give them some little tips for how to construct budgets maybe going forward, players to look for, avoid. So awesome stuff, guys. So Kevin, I'll let you get out of here with this. Tell the listeners, where can they find you? What are you up to these days? What's coming down the pipe here?
Yeah, so working hard on my podcast, getting good traction with it, Fantasy Football Engineering Podcast, now part of the DynastyLeagueFootball.com family of podcasts. That's fairly recent there. Next week I'll have Peter Jennings on. Week after, I got Nathan Yonke of Pro Football Focus. Does a lot of player personnel snaps coverage in the and NFL, more of a writer, and then after that TJ Hernandez. So keep going, my great list of people, and I'm gonna kind of tie in this. So I've been having this theme of borrowing brilliance and pulling from all kinds of different people, and with the DFS guys, I want to kind of emphasize that dynasty people don't focus on setting weekly lineups enough. They're too much on a macro level. And then when you got to go win your league, you got to win it weekly, and you got to make sure that you don't just punt those start-sit decisions. And that's something I want to hit home in the coming weeks as we get into the season.
Yeah,
and my work is on DynastyLeagueFootball.com, of course.
And where can they find you on Twitter? I know you're pretty active on there. Like I said, I love following you on there. You have always some good insights. Pounding the drum for Mike Williams still, that's good. I love seeing those conversations, because
trying, man, that's tough.
That are against you on that. And I saw a tweet today, like, throw out a 2018 first for Mike Williams. That is an auto accept.
Accept. You're gonna give me a future first for Mike Williams. I'll take it, no question. I'm patient. I'm a patient rookie owner. You know, 3-year breakout used to be the big thing, right? I mean, we used to all wait for the 3rd-year breakout, and now people are 2014 completely threw them off and expecting, you know, it's like the digital age with, like, you know, kids on phones. They got this instant gratification problem. You know, I'm typically patient, you know.
I've been Odell Beckham, right?
That's right, man. It's awesome. They look for that immediate success. So I'm a patient owner, but it's tough, man. It bringing up Mike Williams, being a fan of Mike Williams on Twitter is like bringing up politics, man. You can lose followers quick. People are not happy about it.
I follow you on Twitter, and I've seen some of the conversations, and I mean, listening to a lot of the podcasts, I'll say, yeah, you're definitely in the minority there, I think, especially sure. where you had them ranked in terms of your rookie rankings and things like that in Dynasty. But hey, man, stick to it.
Yeah. On Twitter, the_FF_engineer.
Yeah. Excellent. Great follow for, not just Dynasty, but everything. Like I said, his podcast, he's pretty much got irons in just about every fire in terms of football. So you get a well-rounded Twitter follower and access to a ton of good information.
Yeah, I've had Evan Silver on the podcast. I've had Andrew Brandt, salary cap guy, business of sports, knows nothing about fantasy. So he gave some great insight on salary cap and player contracts and things like that. Evan Silva. I've had Manish Mehta, beat writer for the Jets. Sigmund Bloom, TJ Hernandez is coming up. Peter Jennings, DFS coming up. So I'll hit DFS, redraft. I'm going to have to get one of you guys on to talk auctions.
Oh, wow.
Anytime.
If you put one of us on and mention it on that echelon of names, you've just pretty much thrown up the Mount Rushmore
of
fantasy football, right? Jeez.
Yeah. I need you guys. I listened to the Ross Tucker one. I think it was Feasting that.
Was
that?
Beckett was on.
Yeah, was I was gonna call him Uncle Buckets. But that was a great episode. I like that, and Silva's really been great about elevating other formats. Right, he's elevating auctions by having him on. He's elevating Dynasty by having Dynasty people on, and that's really cool. For someone that big of a microphone to be able to give us niche guys like Dynasty or auction kind of like bring us to light a little bit is awesome.
It is.
Well, and I feel like you guys, like Dynasty isn't even necessarily a niche anymore. It is just even the 4 years or whatever we've been playing it, there's so much content out there and so many really smart people that are putting stuff out on social media or on websites. Like, to me, it's there now. I know it's not maybe for the masses still, but it's climbed a ton of popularity. And we're just hoping auction draft kind of, I don't know what the next progression is or where the future holds. I would hope that it starts to, like I said, you guys are all into it in terms of fantasy experts, we'll say. So I'm just hoping the masses start to catch on to that too and realize like Dynasty is fun because it's all year round, it's engaging, and that's why I like auctions too. It's engaging. And hopefully, you guys keep the torch lit.
I was surprised. Two comments before we sign off. One was, I think playing Dynasty helps you become a better season, like a redraft player and everything else, because you stay in tune all year round, right? And so since we become, I feel like I'm ready to draft a redraft team in April or May or June, and often I love to jump into them and then only find out half my guys get hurt before they kick off in September. But that's a downfall. But you're on top of it. I think it makes you a better player in all the avenues of fantasy when you're playing Dynasty. But the second thing on that note too, I've been in a few mocks obviously already, and I'm shocked. Like, I was going in the chat room and how many guys are like, oh, this is awesome, this is way funner, and I'm just shocked. Like, if we feel sometimes that we're a little repetitive, I guess we've been doing it for a while, so it feels like, well, we can't talk about the same stuff, but there's so many people out there that haven't really experienced an auction yet, and once they do, they just think it's amazing. And I was just shocked, like in the chat room the other night, like there was people in there that like didn't know much about it, and they were saying, oh, I'm never going to do a snake draft again. They were talking about it, and they're having so much fun. And I said, well, go to our site and then what is that? But when you just, to me, you would just naturally Google, hey, I want to find out about, you know, an old car. I'd Google the car, or I'd Google something about fishing or whatever. Why wouldn't you Google a fantasy football auction? Or, you know what I mean? Like, this seemed to me that was a natural thing to do. But it's amazing. There's just, you know, people are starting out at different times. I hope more people get involved. And again, thanks, Kevin, for coming on tonight. Appreciate your help.
Man, I enjoy it just as much as you, or if not more, coming on and talking about this stuff.
Thanks.
That's awesome. All right, so we're going to wrap it up then for tonight. I can't remember what Bex usually says, something about springtime in the Rockies. I don't have that tagline at the end, so I'll just say Mr. and I are going to record a pod here later on this week talking about some budget strategies, more specifically breaking things down, you know, position by position, so you can look for that probably this weekend to be posted online. We thank Kevin again. Go check out his podcast, rate, subscribe, his podcast, our podcast, everybody's. Help us all out for providing free content. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll talk to you later.